Hi, everyone. Welcome to a special episode of the Doha Debates podcast. This debate is inspired by Necessary Tomorrows, a podcast from Doha Debates, which combines fiction and fact to imagine better futures. In episode 3 of Necessary Tomorrows, called A Feast for Cobalt, listeners are thrust into a world in the near future where an asteroid is discovered with enough minerals to transition Earth to run on entirely green energy.
We believe we should send a research mission to collect multiple samples from the asteroids and return them to Earth. After we study the samples, we'll send an international mission to extract the asteroids. It can include private industry, and it will pay for the costs of any contractor plus 10% if they finish on schedule. They will be paid for their work, but they do not get to keep everything for themselves.
But how should those minerals be accessed and recovered? Who should decide how the minerals are used? And who gets to plan and profit from this space mission? All of these questions are ripe for debate. Today, we're digging into the promises and perils of space mining. Let's dive right in. Welcome to Doha Debates, where we explore an urgent issue from various sides and try to find common ground. Get ready for a conversation that's well-informed, spirited, civil, and respectful. Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson, and I will be your moderator for this debate. And today we're talking about the business of space. These days, companies like SpaceX, for example, will fly objects like satellites into space. But the business of bringing objects back is about to take off. By some estimates, mining materials from asteroids could be worth trillions of dollars, trillions with a T, or more. So what should the rules be for this new industry? There are a few laws on the books, namely the Outer Space Treaty of 1967. That treaty allows for the free exploration of space, and it bans any one entity from claiming territory in space. But what about mining rights? How much should we be commercializing the final frontier? There are all kinds of issues to consider, from making new craters on the moon, vaporized metal and space junk floating down into Earth's atmosphere, drilling into so-called near-Earth asteroids, and more. But now's the time to start thinking about these things. In February, an American company called Intuitive Machines landed the first privately owned spacecraft on the moon. Last year, India and Japan landed unmanned rovers on the lunar surface. Turkey, the Czech Republic, Singapore, and Pakistan are planning similar missions. China and the United Arab Emirates are also investing in space mining. Supporters say this industry opens up opportunities and prosperity so huge we can't even imagine them all. Critics worry about repeating the problems of mining here on Earth, like pollution, exploitation, unpredictable environmental damage, even colonization. Should the world move forward with mining in space? And if so, how? We've invited two experts with deep personal interests in this topic. Joining us from Adelaide in South Australia is Alice Gorman, aka Dr. Space Junk. She's a space archaeologist and associate professor at Flinders University. Professor Gorman, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Joshua. Good to be here.
Also with us is Jose Akane, the co-founder of Astroforge. That's a private asteroid mining company based in Los Angeles. Jose, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Later in the debate, we will have a question from a global listener. But before we begin, I have two ground rules. First of all, no personal attacks. We're here to pick apart the issue, not each other. And secondly, every question needs a direct answer. Feel free to think out loud. I don't know is always an acceptable answer, but please don't pivot to another topic until you've finished answering the question at hand. And please, my biggest pet peeve, do not answer a question with a question. With that said, Jose, if we could begin with you, please make your case for us just briefly of why you believe that reaping commercial benefits from space, things like mining asteroids and so forth, why that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, exploring and sourcing off-world resources is important for several reasons, right? So firstly, as Earth's population continues to grow, the demand for resources such as minerals, water, energy will increase, we need to be able to tap into these off-world resources in order to sustain the growth of life that we have. Additionally, sourcing off-world helps us advance the knowledge that we have scientifically and technology-wise, as well as making it a more sustainable way of doing the extraction. So right now, it's a very highly polluted process that's happening right now with resource extraction. So taking it off-world enables us to keep the planet clean.
Dig into what kind of resources you're talking about. I mean, what might we find in space that we can't find here on Earth?
There's a whole multitude of minerals. So there's water, there's minerals, there's metals such as iron, nickel, cobalt, platinum, group metals, precious metals. Primarily, those are the things that Astroforge in particular are going after. Water and ice are definitely a case that NASA is going after right now, because as we plan to have lunar bases or colonies in space, we need to be able to sustain, having fuel and water for life out there.
Alice, you've expressed a number of concerns about what commercialization of space exploration could mean. Lay out maybe your one or two biggest concerns.
Well, before doing that, I might contextualize my concerns by talking about my previous career. I'm an academic now, but I actually used to be a cultural heritage consultant working in mining industry on Earth. So I'd be part of large environmental impact study teams and out in the field putting together all of that information to assess the impacts. And I'll also say that I actually love mining technology. I love a diamond drill bit and seeing all of that stuff in action. But I have also seen what happens to terrestrial environments when mining takes place on Earth. And I guess one of my biggest concerns is that historically, the space community does not have a well-developed idea of what the space environment is. It tends to be narrowed down to what resources are available, and sustainability tends to be sort of focused on whether there'll be enough of those resources for people in the future to use. And there's a real sense that because nothing that we know of is alive in these environments, we have no moral responsibility towards protecting their integrity. And I think this is a really big problem. People are starting to think about this, but it hasn't permeated to sort of throughout the international space community. I also think everyone is so in love with the idea of commercialized and private space at the moment that we haven't yet resolved the issues of who benefits from this. So ultimately, a company is not going to be looking to do this for completely altruistic reasons. They will have investors who will be expecting some kind of return on investment. And we're going about this in a very sort of hyper-capitalist way. And if space really is for all humanity, as the Outer Space Treaty says, we're choosing one little kind of really narrow cultural moment to then apply that to all of space. So that worries me.
I want to pick up on, Alice, what you said about a moral compass and the way that we approach this going forward. Jose, paint me a picture of the moral compass that you believe that your industry should use as it thinks this through, particularly if you have a vision for what the ideal future might look like. If this kind of mining bursts into full flower and expands the way that it looks like it could expand, what are some of the moral standards, values, boundaries that you think should be in place?
That's a good question. So as far as a moral compass, I think for me personally, what I think this looks like is making sure that whatever you are going after, you make sure that it does benefit humanity, right? Like what are you doing and why are you doing it? And for us here at Astroforge, that's exactly what we're doing. There is no single vendor that we're selling to in order to reap these benefits. We're selling to the global economy such that everyone benefits from this and not just the US, for example, right? Like everyone should be benefiting from this and not just us.
Before I go any further, Jose, I forgot to ask you to just clarify a bit more about exactly what Astroforge does. Are you actually preparing to build the vehicles that go into space? Do you build the tools, the drill bits that Alice loves so much? Like, what exactly is your company's role in mining and space exploration?
Yeah, I mean, you can say we are building the drill bits, but we, in general, we're building the vehicles to go out to near-Earth asteroids and extract platinum group metals from metallic asteroids in particular, and bring them back to Earth for use here. So we're not targeting an economy in space right now, and mainly because that infrastructure doesn't exist, right? So if we demonstrate this technology and we have metal to bring back, I don't know who to bring them back to. I don't know where I can sell them to in space because it just doesn't exist now. I do know that we do have a supply issue for the material that we're going after here on Earth. And I do know that there are sources out there, limitless, essentially near limitless resources that we can go after and help increase that supply here on Earth.
Alice, I wonder how we have this conversation in a way, considering that it is a whole new frontier. And, you know, everyone who's a Star Trek nerd like me knows some of the ethical questions that come up from episode to episode. But we also know that there's a certain amount of risk involved in all exploration. And I'm not sure, because this is such new science and such a new set of challenges, how many of these questions we can even answer because they're so new. I mean, is this one of those situations where maybe it might behoove us to push a little farther, a little faster, because some of these moral concerns are sort of unknowable until we hit them?
I think a lot of these moral concerns are absolutely knowable. I think some of the consequences and impacts are unknowable. And I think Jose has raised a really good point. Like, we have resources, we don't necessarily have markets, but we can't do anything with those without the technology, which of course AstroForge is working on. So I think there are some fuzzy gray areas, but in general, the kind of rights and wrongs of it, we do know those things. I would say that we don't want to mess up the asteroid belt and destroy asteroids and create debris streams that create new hazards. Nobody wants that. So we can categorically say that's a future outcome that we're striving towards. I think we absolutely do want, according to the Outer Space Treaty that Jose's mentioned as well, we want to make sure there are benefits for all of humanity, not just the wealthy spacefaring nations. So I think everybody would be clear on that. I think the mechanisms to do that well are not fully worked out. And one of the things that's moving really fast, I guess this is something else I think about and worry about, we've kind of had a stable cultural understanding and interaction with space for some time. A whole flurry of stuff around Apollo 11 missions to the moon. Nothing happens for a long while, and now everything is happening again really quickly. So this means meanings of things are changing really quickly. There's like I can't think how to describe it. There's a big ball of little balls moving around, and some will fall out, and those will be the kinds of values that we have going forward. And that shouldn't be random. That should be very carefully considered and thought out. And I guess I'll say, I don't know what Jose will think of this, I think there's a lot of people in the international space community who just haven't really started to think about this enough yet.
Every month, Past Blue produces an original podcast for our unscripted series on the Security Council rotating presidency. In February, we spoke with the ambassador of Guyana, for example. Unscripted brings you straight into the council chamber where the UN's most important work takes place. Each month, we speak to diplomats about their country's agenda in leading the council and their goals to achieving global peace and security. Unscripted is a podcast from Past Blue, a women-led media site providing independent coverage of the UN. Search for Unscripted wherever you get podcasts, starting with SoundCloud.
Let me bring in our global listener who's been paying attention to this conversation and has a question to share. Jana Mawa is joining us from Doha. She's a student and an ambassador for Doha Debates and is interested in all things intergalactic. Jana, welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, hi, everyone. So I want to think about what Jose was talking about, that a lot of companies only oppose regulation when it affects innovation. And I would disagree with that. I think that, and with my experience to privatization and capitalist companies, is that a lot of these companies, they're based on inequality and exploitation of workers who come from my country, Bangladesh, and other poor South Asian countries. So when I think of space, I love the idea of research. I love the idea that, you know, science doesn't have to worry about money or funding from government. But I find it very scary to think about all these different private companies in space, because space is not just like, you're not just working in one country. Space is something that's all around every country in the world, right? So if a private company goes up there and creates a kind of catastrophe, it's not just the US that's suffering. It's also every single country in the rest of the world who have not really had a voice or consent to what these private companies are being allowed to go out there and doing. And then there is this issue where space throughout history has been weaponized by different countries, right? Like, as much space is about science and technology, it is also about politics. I mean, take the Cold War, for example, right? I wonder, because all these companies that we've talked about so far in the podcast, like, you know, Astroforge, like SpaceX, all of these are US-based companies who are global superpowers who we can say we trust somewhat, right? But what if it was the Russian private companies who are leading this space mining operation? Would we be as comfortable with this conversation, with going forward? What if it was Chinese companies that were right now mining asteroids? Would we be as comfortable? No.
Jose, let me let you respond to what Jana is saying, and then Alice, I'll give you a chance to chime in. Jose, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's all about the ethics at that point, right? So let me talk about specifically asteroid mining. Astroforge is just one company out of a handful of companies going after them. There's a few in the US, there's a few in the UK, there are some in the Middle East, and definitely some in China. I don't know who the global leader is, right? I would like to say Astroforge is the global leader. I don't know that, because not everyone publishes their information publicly in the media for me to look at what the current roadmap is, what they have done. For all I know, China could already have done this and just not publishing it and you know, not following the regulations. And again, this brings me back to who is enforcing the regulations. We do not have an infrastructure right now to do that. So I don't know of a good way to impose these ethical implications that you're talking about. It's a very scary world, because as far as I know, China could already be doing this now. And we don't know because the infrastructure is not there to regulate this. So, yeah, that's all I have to say about that point.
Alice?
Well, two things strike me. One is that there are so many people excluded from the dialogues and the structures and the decision-making powers about what happens in space. It's very dominated by certain narrow classes of people, and women often don't get a look in at all. So I think we need to be really conscious of who's making the decisions and who has access to those structures. But thinking about what Jose just said as well, so in the Moon Agreement of 1979, there is a provision made for when lunar mining becomes feasible, that an international organization should be set up to oversee that. And this could potentially apply to other celestial bodies that aren't the moon. And this kind of idea has been also raised and discussed by the Hague Working Group on regulation for activities in space and a couple of other organizations. And I think this is something we need right now. It's not a popular idea, but the idea of an international committee organization or something that basically kind of takes oversight of all of this stuff, who can say, this is a good idea, let's run with that, this one isn't, let's not do that, who can get all of those opinions. And I think it's time for that sort of thing to happen. I think this is something we really need. Jose, what are you about to think?
I love that idea in theory. I just don't know how you get everybody, every country in the world, to sign a document in agreement, right, all together, right? the Artemis Accords, for example, it's very difficult for people to sign the Artemis Accords, right? Like, you don't have a full consensus right now just on those accords alone. So I don't know how you come to an agreement where everybody around the world says, yes, 100% agree with this document and these governing principles.
If there was a way to get everyone in the world to at least consider one aspect of this issue, what's the one thing, I'm sure there's more than one, but just at the top of the list, the one biggest thing that you would like the world community to be thinking about as it sets the rules for things like mining and space? I'm sure there's more than one, but what's at the top of the list for you, Jenna?
Okay, so I think it relates to something that Jose just talked about right now. I'm not too worried about governmental institutions like NASA and, you know, Japan Space Agency or the Indian Space Agency doing space mining, because all of those records are public and they're transparent. And I think that's one thing, if I had to choose any, would be this, especially for private space companies, is they're required to publish all information. Because right now it is very, very opaque. Nobody knows what they're doing, what country is doing what. So this kind of lack of transparency really breeds to lack of accountability, which we really need when we talk about space, because space is not only expensive, it also, again, affects all of us.
Jenna Mawa in Doha, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your questions and your thoughts and your perspective on all of this, and a little bit of inspiration, to be quite honest. Thank you so much for that. Are there certain areas, Jose, though, where the industry, from your perspective, has been open to or welcoming regulation? We've heard a bit of this in the last few months with the debates over artificial intelligence, with all the various apps that now exist, ChatGPT and Grok and Gemini and Llama and all of these others, where you'll have hearings in front of the US Congress where members of these tech companies, the CEOs, say, set rules, we'll follow them. We wish you would set rules. We'll follow whatever rules you set. Just go ahead and set the rules. Are there certain areas, Jose, from your perspective, where the industry would welcome some clarity on where the boundary lines are?
Yes, because then they can design an account and plan for that. So I think every industry is absolutely welcoming of these regulations. I think the pushback on regulations is if it stifles innovation, right? So there's a balance you have to reach where you don't want to impose such regulations that it's impossible to do anything, but you do want to impose regulations so you can design an account for that and build towards that. So you're making sure that you're not, you know, stepping on anybody's toes, for example.
Give me an example, Jose, of an area where you think that the industry, or maybe even just you as a business person, would welcome some clarity from government.
So for us, you know, being a U.S. company, we do adhere to the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, but we also adhere to the U.S. Space Act. And the U.S. Space Act allows us to go to an asteroid and mine, as a commercial company, mine the resources, bring it back, and bring it back and sell, right? Like that is what's allowed of us to do with the U.S. Space Act. But there are no ownership rights to this. So someone else can come in and essentially, if we're not operating in that asteroid, someone else can come in and mine that asteroid, and that's great. It's a bit of a gray area from that standpoint, right? Because yes, you can mine and yes, you can extract from there. But at the same time, these ownership rights have been this weird gray area from the beginning, ever since the Outer Space Treaty, right? And no one knows who owns what. And I think at some point that's going to have to come to fruition. Like, there's going to be some ownership rights and some regulations with that as it comes along. And it's good that we're having these conversations now about it.
Alice, let's dig into that. I mean, here on Earth, at least, you know, I'm from the United States, and I've lived in a number of states that were built by sudden booms in industry. You know, I'm from Florida, where after Walt Disney showed up, everyone wanted land. I moved to California, which got rich off of gold. I currently live in Las Vegas, which got rich off of silver. I mean, it's known as the battle-born state because the silver from Nevada allowed it to help fund the union effort in the Civil War. And that always comes with a lot of claim jumping and all of the awfulness that comes with it. Has history taught us perhaps that maybe it's better to just let industry go ahead with clear rules rather than try to hold it back? I worry about what would happen if rules were not set and enough wealthy, powerful people were like, to heck with it, we're done waiting, and they just went ahead and did what they wanted.
Well, this is the big issue in space, isn't it? No one can hear you scream. No one can prevent you from doing things. No one can call you to account or enforce penalties. A lot of the time you're going to be doing things that are literally out of sight. So we're going to be relying on private companies to be accountable to governments and to the public about what they're doing. So I think that's an important part of it. I suppose I'm a big fan of regulation. Like, the mining industry in most countries on Earth is very heavily regulated, and somehow they still manage to go ahead and you know, keep the industry going and supply the minerals that they're selling and have some innovation happening along the way. And fortunately, a lot of innovation that's happening in terrestrial mining right now is about how to better use those resources. So to go back to the tailings from an old mine and extract the minerals that are still there and were discarded. So those are technologies that I think are fantastic that we should be encouraging. But to come back to your original point, like, we have a lot of, in space, we're looking to a whole lot of different kinds of terrestrial legislation as analogies. And these are often laws around the Antarctic, the deep sea, all of that. One place that I think has not yet been properly explored is analogies with mining legislation on Earth. And a lot of those are very clear about what can be done and what can't be done, about what responsibilities are to the environment and to communities. And just because no people are living in space right now or in the asteroid belt doesn't mean there aren't communities on Earth who have some kind of connection or who are stakeholders in some way. So I think we should actually be looking to some of those pieces of legislation which set up systems to exploit resources that are not based on ownership or sovereignty. I think there's a lot we could learn from that.
I think the biggest thing about regulation is, how do you enforce it in space? That is the number one point, is we don't have infrastructure to enforce this at all. So great, we can set up these regulations. That's great for companies to adhere to and launch a vehicle up there. But the continuous operations in space, there is no infrastructure, and no one's really even talking about how to regulate that in space, right? It's all based on the honor system. I'm going to deliver you data to show that I'm only going to be there for, you know, 5 years, or I can deorbit in 25 years, or I'm not going to create debris. Here's my analysis for that. No one's sitting next to me saying, okay, great, now your time is up, get out of there.
I mean, you, as I understand, are born in the Philippines. They were colonized by the Spanish, the Americans, the Japanese. I mean, we've seen what happens when people with enough power and enough influence and not enough people looking over their shoulders are put on the honor system. Why would we do that again?
I think there's, as humans, we take information and we process it and we learn from it. And to me, that's the only thing we can do, right? So we take what's happened in the past and make sure that we can move forward and say, great, let's not do that, let's do this. I think to Alice's point, and what I was trying to make, is the enforcement of these regulations is not a hindrance. It's just highlighting the fact that to truly get to a place where it's responsible, we need to have the infrastructure in place completely. I can't take on the entire infrastructure of asteroid mining because my company would go bankrupt in 10 seconds. But I can take on one part of it, and I'm hoping that that sparks the conversations around, okay, what else? What else needs to happen? And I'm hoping another company can come up and say, great, I will take this piece on, and another company will take this piece on, and a government agency will take this on, right? So that's the hope with companies like this, is they start the conversation, they start the spark.
Alice, I think the flip side to the concern about building these new industries, which I think maybe makes the mining thing feel less remote, right? It's just a new industry that needs regulation and management and so on, is that unless you regulate the industry and allow it to flourish, it's going to be the Wild West. I worked in broadcasting for more than 20 years. Radio was bananas in the United States until the Federal Radio Commission, now the Federal Communications Commission, passed the Radio Act. And then there was licensing, and radio exploded because there were rules and the industry was going to kind of do what it wanted to do anyway. That, depending on who you ask, could almost be an argument for giving the industry a little more permission, for allowing it to begin to stake some claims, to let legitimate actors jump in quickly, follow the regulations, figure out where the blind spots are, and get things moving. But if you slow it down, then the worst actors, the ones who will never listen to regulation, they're the ones who are going to claim jump. Maybe that's a case for moving this farther and giving the industry a little bit of leeway, at least at first.
Because I think some of those people are the same ones. Like, how do we separate the pure from the damned in this concept? It's not just the pure who are going to get there early. You're right in the sense that I think some of this is going to be worked out in practice. It has to be. So we kind of don't have any other way of doing that. But when that happens on Earth, being worked out in practice often means ending up in the courts. And a lot of, you know, mining companies are quite happy to let that be the process whereby some kind of certainty is reached. And at the end of the day, so much of this is about reducing risk. This is why I think space mining companies like ones on Earth are interested in regulation, because it gives them something to assess and then work around the risks in doing it. But in the sense of moving faster, because we'll kind of get to that point where we know what's happening faster, I think we could end up in some really bad places. I think we could end up with precedents being set, which we're going to regret later on. And I think that the countries which have legislation, like the US, Luxembourg, Japan now, there's a couple of others, which specifically say it is legitimate to sell resources extracted from a celestial body. That's a precedent that's been set. That's now kind of the common way of thinking. Jose's mentioned that it's like not completely set in stone, but for some countries, that's the way of thinking. We could easily end up with regulations that become accepted that aren't good. And we have to have some way of making that assessment before they happen. So I don't know, I guess I'm for slowing things down. And in many ways, I don't have to worry about that, because that we don't yet have the technology to actively extract any resource from an asteroid. So that in itself is going to slow things. The moon's different, but we're not focusing on the moon today. But for asteroids, it's going to be, I don't know, Jose, how long do you reckon before somebody, Astroforge perhaps, is going to be able to get a chunk of some mineral that could actually be sold on Earth?
With our timeline, if everything goes perfectly, I'm going to caveat that with everything going perfectly. By the end of the decade, we'll bring back material for sale.
Well, then with that in mind then, Jose, then paint the picture, make the case for, I hate to say the average person, because everywhere around the world, average is completely different. But make the case for people who are looking at this and who are nowhere in the class of the wealthy investors behind some of these efforts. They're not part of government. They're not part of regulatory agencies. They're not executives. They're just trying to make it through life, right? They're trying to feed their families and pay their rent and, you know, keep roofs over their heads and stay out of trouble. Why should I put any energy into helping a company like Astroforge do any of this? This is a rich dude's game. We got problems on Earth. Why should we help you do any of this, clear the way, as opposed to just pushing this to the bottom of the legislative pile and dealing with concerns right here on terra firma? Why should we move this forward faster?
Yeah, I mean, the commodities in general power what we do, right? Energy, water, minerals, resources. We need those things to sustain our way of life. Even the clean energy goals that we have, we don't have enough resources to even get to that goal. We're right now, even the terrestrial mining industry is looking for new deposits in order to meet the goals to get to clean energy. So it's important for somebody else to go off and say, okay, what is another solution to this problem, to this crisis that we have? And let's go after that. Because other people are also doing that using other verticals, right? So it's not just us that's trying to, you know, protect our way of being and making it more sustainable, making it more clean. It's the mining industries as well.
Is mining in space an excuse for companies not to worry about being good stewards of the Earth? Does this give them more permission, more runway to not clean up their act on Earth because, oh, we'll just get it from an asteroid in a few years?
No, that's absolutely not.
Absolutely not? You've got more faith in the industry than I have.
We are talking to numerous mining companies. I think they do get a bad rep. I mean, I'm sure that yes, they do have a lot of their processes are toxic and in some ways bad for the environment. But they are they're actively working to try to make it clean and how to making it better for the environment and more sustainable. So I'm not saying that they're not going to us saying, okay, cool, you guys take care of our problems. We're just going to continue on this path of destroying Earth and not going to clean up our processes. Like they're actively trying to do that. So it is not an excuse. Like just because asteroid mining is enabled doesn't mean that, you know, the current standard now just goes off and works as is, right?
Alice, is this kind of the lesser of two evils in a way? I mean, we are going to need significantly more quantities of a variety of minerals, particularly rare earth minerals, in order to meet our energy goals, our conservation goals, just our sustainability goals for the future. It sounds like, for better or worse, we have painted ourselves into a corner where we need resources from somewhere. And on top of that, people need to work. I think AI disrupting the whole world with automation and, you know, redundancies and jobs becoming obsolete, the nature of an honest day's work for an honest day's wage is upended instantaneously. And you're going to have millions and millions of people around the world going, okay, now what do I do? Is this kind of the lesser of the two evils in a way? Do we have to kind of grit our teeth for a little while and put up with a little bit of, let's say, ethical friction in order to just kind of get things restabilized?
What we really want to aim for here, I think, is the best of all of those scenarios. Like, we don't want huge populations of unemployed people who are living a terrible existence because of poverty, although, you know, we've already got that, so nothing changes there. We want people to have better lives, to have opportunities, all of those things. But I don't see why we can't make this happen all at once. And I guess one of the important things for me is that maybe we do the same things but with a completely different attitude. So Joshua, you mentioned before, we've got that colonial background to resource exploitation. We've got that approach to the world where everything that's not human is available as a resource for us to use. But I think it would make a big difference, particularly to public perception in supporting these activities, if we were going into that not with that colonial resource extraction mindset, but with the idea that we are co-participants with other celestial bodies in trying to achieve that right balance. If we're going in not to rip those minerals out and say that asteroid has no value, it's worthless except for what's currently got market value on Earth, because of course that changes all the time. The resource that's got a high price today won't be the same resource that you can sell tomorrow. So if we go in with an attitude that isn't about the rest of the non-human world is there just for us and only for us, if we go in with this spirit of we're all dependent on the same things, you know, the same geological processes, the same celestial processes, what is our part in that, and how do we get that good outcome of distributing benefits to the people of Earth while still maintaining the integrity of these celestial bodies, I think we can avoid that period of ethical friction, which just has popped into my head the vision of Isaac Asimov's Foundation novels, in which he sets up the foundation to reduce the likelihood of, political chaos for thousands of years in the Galactic Empire. So we could try to be setting up these kinds of cultures of how we interact with space.
But how much confidence do you have, though, in today's world leaders to do that, particularly with people who need work now, who need economic enfranchisement right now, who, you know, I'm sure that there are a whole lot of people who would like to take a different kind of ethical route, but, you know, the baby in the crib is screaming for a bottle right now and the rent is due on the first date certain or we're out of a house. The time that it would take to get world leaders to coalesce, like, put me in a job today, like help me get my bills paid today with this new thing. And then you guys can debate it however you want in, you know, the European Parliament or in the United Nations or the US Congress or wherever. But like right now, bills to pay. Is there a middle way to speak to that person around the world who's like, I need work right now?
I mean, that's a really good point. I guess if you put it like that, I don't have faith in world leaders to establish and navigate that process for us. But I also don't have faith in world leaders are not interested in giving people jobs or getting people out of poverty or making people live better lives. If they were, we wouldn't be doing this right now. So I guess my answer to that question is I have no faith in world leaders.
Jose, how do you see that in terms of whether world leaders are even up to the task of dealing with all of this?
I think the way that we're structured now, I think it's an impossibility to take everyone's voice into account. What I mean by that is you have a world leader representing billions of people. And yes, you have a structure where you have representatives from each, but again, is that the best way to navigate, to lead the new world order when we go to space, right? Like, I don't know what that is. So I don't know. Right now, I think it's inefficient. I don't think it accounts for everyone's vote or everyone's voice. So in its current state, I don't think it works. So to me, I think it's an ongoing conversation in how we actually evolve as a species, as we move into space. What new world order has to happen for us to account for everyone's voice? I don't know the answer to that, unfortunately.
Before we end our conversation, I want to see if we can crystallize some of the areas where Jose, Alice, where the two of you agree on this issue, despite the various differences you have. Jose, what are some of the areas of agreement that stand out to you?
I think both of us went into this. Oh, I can't speak for Alice. I went into this going, oh man, I got to defend in-space resource utilization. This is, what am I going to do? No, I think Alice believes in that as well, as long as it can be done responsibly. But I believe the same thing. And to do that, we have to start somewhere, right? These conversations have to happen now. This balance of, okay, where do we innovate first, then regulate? I mean, that to me is a constant thread that I am living right now, right? And I've seen in the past industries that I've worked in. So I think it was more a surprise that we agreed on a lot more things than I anticipated.
And Alice, before we go, areas of agreement?
I'd like to agree with Jose on that one. Like, to me, it's incredibly heartening. And you know, I spend a lot of time at space events in the space community. I live and work in Australia. Mining is a huge thing here. Space mining is a huge thing here. So I'm very familiar with the issues and the dialogues and all of that. What gives me so much hope is that there are people like Jose who are thoughtful and of goodwill and open to discussion and to thinking of different ways of doing things. And I think ultimately that's what we need. We need to create that space where we can have, as we've just had today, that open and honest dialogue, where the possibility of doing things differently and getting to that better world that we all want comes closer to being realized. So I'm going away from our session today with the predominant emotion of hope.
Alice Gorman, space archaeologist at Flinders University. Professor, we appreciate you making time for us today. Thank you very much.
It has been a pleasure.
And Jose Akane, co-founder of Astroforge. Jose, thank you.
Thank you. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Doha Debates is a production of Qatar Foundation. Our podcast is produced by FP Studios and Doha Debates. Our producers include Julian Haida, Mandy Lester, and Claudia Tatey. FP Studios' managing director is Rob Sachs. Our executive producers are Katrine Dermody, Japhet Weeks, Amjad Atala, and Jigar Mehta. To learn more about Doha Debates, visit dohadebates.com. That's dohadebates.com. There you can find out more about our other podcasts, short films, upcoming events, and more. And please, if you like our podcast, follow the show and definitely write us a review. So until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening.